Leslie FM. Oh yeah, Leslie FM. Oh yes, my friend, I'm here today to talk about Leslie FM, a podcast hosted by Johnny Mac, Mr. Jezalenko, and Dr. Adrian Warmack. How cool is that? And if you wonder what the topics be, they talk to world experts and gurus about new technologies. Yes, it's so exciting. Oh yeah, you know.
Hello everybody, my name is Adrian Warman and I'm delighted to welcome you to Season 1, Episode 6 of Hursley FM. It's an awesome pleasure to introduce my co-hosts, the twin colossi that are...
Hello, I'm Colossi 1, Jez Kelway.
I'm shocked, but I'm Colossi too.
What are you bestriding this week,
John? I don't know, I'll have to pick... Oh, I'm going to have to pick something.
Right, by the end of the show... You need to be bestriding something like a legend.
All right.
Like a colossi, even. I love that. I'm warming to that.
Maybe we could have people write in with suggestions.
Yes, maybe, yeah. And maybe like implements that we could hold. Like good Colossus always has. Like a shield and a sword or something.
I think so, yes.
Like
yes.
Game of Thronesy or Braavos, isn't it?
A shield of crystallized titanium.
Oh, look at that. Oh, like Jean-Claude Van Damme bestrode those two articulated lorries, didn't he?
Yeah. He did, for the Volvo advert.
Yes,
it was
he
amazing.
Did. That was really
it was brilliant.
Good.
It was classic Van
Damme. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Had some Van Damage there, didn't they?
I'm always doing that.
Yes. I would be amazed if you could do that.
On the way home, yeah, I always do that.
Well, it's the easiest way to get a lift.
It is, of course it is. Yeah.
So, let's get this epic underway with some news.
I think you've got the best news this week, Adrian.
Oh, well, that's very kind.
Because your excitement is burgeoning.
Steady. <What?
Yes, I am enthused at the fact that, as we record this, a mere 45 minutes away, Google I.O. 2014, the keynote speech, is actually kicking off.
Well, people mistakenly look at that, the real action is here.
Absolutely.
That's right, yes. We should go live.
Yes, we are busily preparing our live stream as we speak.
Absolutely.
So what can we look forward to, fella? What sort of things are going to be out?
Well, the rumour mill has been doing overtime. Sundar Pichai of Google has apparently leaked a little bit of information which suggests that the next version of Android may be announced, not released.
Cool.
The question is whether this will be Android 4.5 or even the full 5.0. But if they maintain their usual track record of having sweet desserts as the name, so cupcake, donut,
ice cream sandwich,
that sort of thing. So the next letter is L, and there are various suggestions. Lollipop seems to be
a
popular one. Licorice is another one.
So
we helps with the digestion.
Indeed, yes. Other exciting technologies, particularly relevant to us here in the UK, Google Glass. There's a new version of Google Glass, version 2 has been announced. A bit more memory, a bit better battery life.
Oh.
But yes, we're in the UK, we're very privileged. Google Glass is available to us for the knockdown price of £1,000.
Knockdown, wow. When you say knockdown...
As in, you could knock me down with a feather.
Yes. Are you tempted?
I'm tempted with the technology, but not at £1,000. Oh, it's just way too much.
Fair enough. No, that's good. I saw a brilliant advert for that. I think it was a Google advert, but it was following a fellow as he went on a very long trip, and there's a wonderfully rewarding end to it. But he recorded the whole thing on his Google Glass.
Wow. Really?
Not a happy ending, John. He gave me the look. In that context.
You can't prove it.
We're going to have to edit that
one. You can't prove it.
But no, it's an absolutely fantastic ending to it. And I wish I had the link to share with you.
So are you tempted?
So I'm tempted by the technology. I think the technology is one of them. And obviously, it is the next step. You know,
it's wearable
technologies. I mean, it's been coming for a while, jawbones, all that kind of stuff. So I'm thoroughly excited by the technology. It's a little bit early for me at that price. I was bemoaning, not to the fine fellows, that I have a rather large bill because I've been invaded by Death Watch beetles at my house. So no toys for me for a little while in that context. But no, it looks wonderful. It looks brilliant. You know.
I must admit, I don't know if because I'm... As you can tell, I'm tremendously vain.
I can tell by your unshaven appearance.
Semi-clothed appearance.
You're actually wearing a shirt today, though.
It's, I know, but nice. anything that was clean.
The right way around.
Yeah. No coffee stains.
It's even my shirt as well. Just like,
not just out of the changing room.
Not just stolen from passerby to pass the office. But I don't know, it just seems really, I don't know, just wearing those things, it just seems to single you out as, I don't know.
At the moment, yeah. But mobile phones were like that. When I got my first mobile phone, I was merciless. I had a mobile phone because I had to ring my mate up to pick me up from Bristol. I was commuting from Winchester to Bristol. And my kind mate, Big Al, would come pick me up on Fridays. So I got a mobile phone so I could ring him when the train was inevitably delayed.
Yes.
You know, hilariously pulls into a siding for half an hour for no foreseeable reason.
Yeah. To avoid the leaf.
Exactly, yeah, I can see where. But so it was really useful, but oh man, I got abuse. I got abuse.
But what was it like the late 80s where mobile phones were the size of, like, you know, your leg?
Yes, yeah. And carrying a shoebox around. No, it wasn't. It was a Nokia. It was one of the first Nokia editions.
It was quite small then.
Yeah, and when Orange first came out, it was really good. You could fit it in your pocket, but not many people had them. But I think it's like that. I think you'll see people, and then suddenly you'll see the benefits of it.
Yeah.
And then boom, you're off. I'm a little worried about the fact that you can just have the camera on all the time. Mm. You know, there's been some comments about reading people's pin details and things like that. Yes. I mean, it's natural evolution, right? We'll obviously evolve to do it. But I love the ideas of it.
Would you find it disconcerting if somebody, you're having a conversation with somebody.
Yeah, it's being recorded.
Not even being recorded, but them wearing it while you're talking to them. It just seemed, for me, it seemed a little bit almost kind of, not quite a natural conversation, but it's a bit like someone's going, well, you've mentioned the word orange. Let me go and find out all the things about the orange.
Yeah, you know? That's true. I wonder if, but beneficially, I wonder if when I'm talking to someone, I could subtly get them to superimpose Brad Pitt's face over mine whilst they're talking to me. That could be quite useful, couldn't it?
My wife would love that. If you could superimpose Brad Pitt's face over your
over mine. What are you saying?
I may have to cut that out.
So a grand, that's quite a lot, but it's getting within the realms of possibility, isn't it? It's going to drop.
Yeah. Probably more likely will be other kind of wearables, some kind of watch technology. And I did hear a very interesting rumour about some of the projects that are looking at some very small-scale nanotechnology, which would be very small monitoring devices that would be injected into your bloodstream to perform simple diagnostics. And as the blood flows underneath the watch, it reports using an RFID technology into the watch to basically say, yes, you're still fine. These are the measurements we've taken.
Really?
Oh, yes. Yes. And while that might be speculative, you can see how it's possible.
Yeah, I'm flashbacking to Red Dwarf there. Mm. When Lister ends up with that weightlifter's body because the nanites decide to rebuild him in a more efficient, more attractive way. That's fascinating. Oh, nanotechnology.
Did you see the new Outer Limits? When I say new, about 10 years ago.
That is new. Yes. Fully up to date as always.
Well, yes, that's right. You mean it's not 1986? What are you talking about?
What's going on?
What's happening?
16-bit.
I think he has been stuck in that
time. Yes, judging by that shirt, definitely. Yeah.
But there was an episode around the use of nanobots. And it was to make you more efficient as a human being.
Yeah.
And did things like healing you and that kind of stuff. This guy got burnt and then he's like, all healed. Oh, this is brilliant, fantastic.
Cool.
And I thought, why don't you see me getting burnt quite a lot? Hmm. Why don't I make you some kind of ridiculous sort of crocodile hide?
No, absolutely.
So you became some kind of hideous monster.
Yes.
And then because
they're trying to electrocute him to kill him and he couldn't be killed.
That is exactly right.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
And as well, the bots thought, do you know what he needs? About 8 eyes.
Ooh.
So all around him, like his eyes under his head. He's like, and he became like this thing. It was just
That does sound very good. That's what Twilight Zone went about.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
Great.
So, but I mean, that's the obvious thing, isn't it? I mean, I know there's a lot of stem cell research and stuff, but you know, we can rebuild him, nanite technology, Iron Man 3 stuff. Oh, it's all good.
So that's a nice long discussion there.
Jess.
Yeah, I've got a bit of news. I am. It's with joyous abandon that I celebrate this. It's absolutely fantastic. I like to be a small scale eco warrior. I'm very careful about what cars I buy, all that kind of stuff. You know, I'd cycle to work, all these kind of bits and bobs. I do my little bit, right? I was hugely impressed to discover at thinkprogress.org that Germany set a new record generating 74% of power needs from renewable energy. That meant that in Germany, people's electricity bills actually dipped into the negative very briefly.
Really?
Yeah, because it's using renewable energy generation using, where's it got here? It's renewable energy sources, which is wind. I had the list here and I've lost it. We're going to have to edit that. Sorry.
That's what he thinks will happen.
Christmas special?
Exactly.
Here we come.
We'll just play some music in the background.
Yes. It's using wind power, solar power, and various other means. But they actually got to 74% of their energy needs supplied by renewable energy.
Really?
Yeah, that's where they're the kind of numbers we need to be getting to. Yes. You know, latest reports are saying we've got 5 years left where we can actually do something about it.
And was that for a particular town in Germany? Or?
It was across the country, actually.
Wow, really?
Renewable generators produced 40.2 billion kilowatt hours of electricity, Bloomberg reported. The article's talking about across the country. Goodness. So
I saw an infographic on Twitter saying it must be true. Mm-hmm. And they showed how much space it would take for solar panels to produce the power needs for the entire world.
Yes.
And they had like the African continent in the middle of the Sahara, it's a very small square.
Mm-hmm.
And that small square in desert that's simply not used by anybody.
Dead space.
Could be reused.
Dead space,
yeah.
Reused.
Absolutely.
To power the everything. Everything. Mm. Everything.
You don't need, it's amazing, you don't actually need much. I mean, it's...
No.
It's in part, it would be very easy to be depressed by such understanding, because whenever I dig onto the global energy crises, it does seem like pretty much the world economy is run by oil, right? And the production and distribution therein, and petroleums and stuff. But actually, there are many, 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 many sustainable alternatives to electricity supply. And there's other questions about, you know, electric cars and nickel and all that sort of stuff, you know, that's important. But ultimately, we absolutely have the technology. You know, we can have geothermal wind turbines. We've got all sorts of stuff that can
answer
the
questions. I suppose when you're talking about renewables on that sort of scale, it wouldn't matter how efficient it was, really. I mean, you could be going at 0.1% efficiency.
Yeah, precisely.
It doesn't matter.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. It's frustrating that we're not doing enough about it. We absolutely have the technology to do it, and the only thing that stops us is money.
Yeah, and I'm kind of, this is the thing, I think this is the crux, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's very hard to make money out of free energy.
Well, exactly, yeah, because it's free, isn't it?
Yeah.
More importantly, it's the power associated with it.
Indeed.
Power as in political power.
I do, absolutely, and I find that's the most frustrating thing for me, because money is a made-up thing, but it's hindering human progress hugely.
Well, maybe it's one of those areas where rather than top-down, being progressed, it's bottom up, so individuals doing things.
So that's mostly what people are doing. Yeah. I mean, but it takes a country like Germany to just go, no, we're doing that, boom, and off they go. And it's just magnificent.
That's
approach.
Amazing, isn't it?
Just like, no, we're doing that.
Yeah.
You know, Scandinavians are saying, no, we're doing that, and off they go. Brilliant. Yeah. I mean, obviously, I think Norway might be frustrated if the oil business ceased immediately.
Yeah.
But I'm sure they'd find an alternative.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
So there you go, that's my bit of news.
So, John, some news for us?
Yeah, so, I guess it is news. So I saw on, I think it was Engadget, there was news about an Android TV caster in Japan.
Wow.
That has been... I don't know why I'm laughing about it. a natural reaction.
I'm just happy because you've had... Good evening and welcome to the news. It just immediately conjures images.
But I'm looking at it now, and it's so lifelike.
Really?
So lifelike, yeah. And so they've likened it to an automated process where you get the news feed automatically in tweets, that kind of thing. But that human interaction, they've always perceived to be human-to-human interaction.
Yeah.
This actually does the job really, really well. And it's not significant in itself, but I was thinking about that and the nature of intelligence, because I've got this little puppy in the Museum of Humanity.
All right, interesting. Yeah, okay.
And so linked to that is very closely is with intelligence. And we're back thinking about the Turing test.
Oh, yes.
That came around. Well, that was had a resurgence very recently. And I don't know what you think, but wasn't that just a lot of old nonsense?
The Turing test does seem to be a little bit.
Yes. Yeah. Because the winner, and I'm doing air quotes at that point, was not so much an AI, but more of a chatbot that was supposed to be equivalent to, was it a 13-year-old Ukrainian?
Something like that.
How did they work out as a Ukrainian?
Well, the reason...
It's very specific, isn't it?
Yeah. The reason was to imply that the English language usage you were getting back from the chatbot wasn't as good.
Oh, okay. I see. It's nothing to do with Chernobyl.
No. I think it might perhaps...
Wow. Radiation mutation.
I think it might perhaps have been a Russian team that put it together.
All right.
Okay, fair enough.
So there is a logic to it, but it did seem... as if they were slightly trying to bias the assessment process, you know, be a bit more tolerant because he's not supposed to speak proper English. Well, a proper AI would be very polite and perfect English as they take over the world.
So. Yes. Yes, exactly, yeah.
And bend you to their will.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But I kind of thought, I know it was a long time ago, and I know the original test was that kind of, that curtain with like a letterbox, and you posted in a kind of a question, and answer came back, and you went, "Ah, this sounds like it could be a human being." And then, voila, whatever was behind was then intelligent or not intelligent.
Yeah,
it's hard to believe that that would depend on the person asking the question as to whether or not that thing was deemed to be intelligent or not.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because the next person can well and go, "Well, actually, it's not."
Is it self-aware and is it capable of abstract conceptualization?
Yeah. It is 1 minute, and the next minute it isn't.
Yeah, exactly.
And it is again. No,
yeah,
it's not.
Yeah. I mean, with any test, right, you can always create some kind of quote-unquote intelligence that's geared to pass that test.
Yeah,
so,
true.
You know, it has to be constantly updated, and it is a perception, isn't it? But you're getting deep there.
Right? I know. I'll edit that as well. Don't worry, I'll go.
Yeah. What's in that coffee?
The usual.
John's got a detox thing this week, and he's got a rather really sort of interesting substance that he's drinking.
Let's be clear, it looks like mould.
Can I tell you about my detox?
I will, please share.
I'm in the evangelical phase of detoxing, yeah. Which is the last phase.
Lord, I looked up and said, and I said, give me a detox. I said, brother.
I believe that is the last phase before I give it up.
Yes, okay. There is one phase in this. Evangelical, that's it.
So I've been putting my daughter to bed in the evening, and I found that I would fall asleep while reading the bedtime story. I may be going, Daddy, isn't this a bit ridiculous, Father? Shouldn't I be asleep more than you? And so I thought, well, maybe I need to look at the things as over my diet. And it's hard to maintain a very healthy diet with a busy life sometimes. So
It is, I agree.
Not easy. So I had a look around, and I thought, well, what are the things that I'm missing and that I didn't really like? Things like kale, spinach, celery, sprouts, all those lovely green things.
Broccoli?
Broccoli's in there as well. Broccoli's in there as well. And also...
Cucumber. Oh, boom.
I've got that in there as well. And
cabbage.
Also... No, I don't have cabbage, but I've got some. Well, maybe I do.
Well, kale is. Kale is near cabbage, isn't it? Is that similar family?
Okay. Whatever they are.
Right, okay.
Bring them all to a blender and then put the power on to 1200 watts and then it makes a smoothie. Tastes vile. As only those uncooked things together in a big glass can.
That's good.
But I'll tell you what, though, after 5 days of doing it, I actually feel. 200% better.
If you add Tabasco to it, that might
Which just finished me off entirely.
No, it's good.
Tabasco is it good, really?
Yeah. It's also very healthy to have some chilies through. Yeah, Jamie Oliver was talking about that.
Is this some kind of joke?
No, I love Tabasco. Man, I have Tabasco with everything. Boom.
I wonder if that's the recipe for creating the Hulk.
Oh God, yeah. John, yeah. Stop it now.
Yeah. Well, I'll put the ingredients in the show notes. Yes. With the optional Tabasco.
There you go,
Tabasco.
You can have your own very, very disgusting smoothie.
Your own recipe for making something.
Tabasco for breakfast, though.
Oh, yeah, Bloody Mary.
You reckon so?
Yes, and a good Bloody Mary. That's
really?
Yeah, really good hangover cure.
Wow.
But, I mean, that's mostly because of the vodka in it, but
I'll give it a,
the Tabasco's tasty, man.
When I leave, will you be going, I wonder if you'll actually do that.
I won't be, no, because whenever I travel on a long-distance plane journey,
yeah.
I always have tomato juice with shots of Tabasco in it.
I do like that, actually.
It's really, really nice. Mm.
Yeah, that is nice.
I don't know why particularly on planes, but it's just a lovely thing to have.
Well, you heard it here first. I'll give it a go.
In terms of making things, I saw Adrian dropped in a beautiful segue there, as usual, keeping us on it. We've got a special guest this week.
We've got a special guest. Somebody rather special from close to home here in Hursley.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think we better wheel him in.
Wheel him in.
Let's wheel him in.
So, it's with great pleasure that we have with us today a legend from the IIB team in Hursley. Anton Piatek, welcome.
Hello.
Welcome to the show. Tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, I've been in IIB and previously broker for about 9 years. The last 6 months or a bit longer have been spent on the Industry Packs team, doing a lot of web UI work, but I've spent time writing Java, C++, and an awful amount of Perl.
Excellent. So an all-round techie type character.
Yeah, I tend to start in a certain role and then find that I get a little bit wandering and end up poking a bit more than I was supposed to. In a good way.
We're leaving that one.
And I noticed that you're wearing an Ubuntu lanyard. Is that interest for you?
I am maybe known slightly within IBM for tinkering with Ubuntu. I may have accidentally created a derivative of Ubuntu that has 6,500 users within IBM.
Accidentally, user?
Well, I got bored of running Windows and started running Debian. And a year later, it sort of gained traction. And I kind of picked up a small side project in Hursley with about 20 users. And it was just one developer. A year later, he'd left to change his career to medicine, of all things. Got bored with IT. And I picked it up, and the users sort of doubled and tripled, and then kind of merged with some other attempts in IBM to do Ubuntu. And suddenly we were talking about 1,000, 5,000 users. Almost sort of in a couple of weeks as it grew.
Nice.
So, yeah, we update with every release of Ubuntu going around, and we've got some levels corporately approved.
It's a great community. I run the OCDC on my laptop as well, and it's absolutely fabulous. Really, really great. So, thank you.
You're welcome. It's always amazing to see how many people do run the Ubuntu client I've written, because it started out as just me being annoyed with the fact that I had to go and grab the Linux builds of Notes and then mess around with horror indices and installers that didn't work properly and hacks for Debian because they were aimed for Red Hat and stuff. And so I just chucked it into a package and put it online and said, look, just add this line and you can have the few things I've spent the time fixing. Mm. And that sort of grew to more and more things. And other people said, hey, I've got these other things. Can I put them in? So I said, yeah, sure, put them in. Before you know it, we've got 200-300 packages in there and it does a whole pile of stuff.
Do you think that style of working has led to the way in which you approach other things as well? I mean, we'll talk a bit more about Make and so on, but has that, here it is, join in, has that influenced the way in which you like to work?
Probably. I tend to find that in my professional work, if I find something that I want to change or fix or question, I tend to sort of play with it, fiddle with it, ask other people who seem to know, why is it like this, can it be like this, would it be better that way? Quite frankly, the answer is it's like that because that's the way I found it from the last guy 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And if you can make it better, just do it. And so I find myself writing Perl scripts that do other things that I've never seen before to fix them up and make them do more, or grabbing packages for something else and chucking them in a shared open client because I can. Mm-hmm. And other people say, hey, I've got this other thing, that'd be really cool. I'm sort of, well, great. Mm-hmm. Show me what you've got. I'll help you package it, get a bit polished, and let's give it to more users.
Isn't that a little bit about the same way that Linus Torvalds also got started? He would have his deputies, we bring packages in, and
I think it's the way the whole open source community is kind of built to work. It's no one man army that does everything. You tend to have someone who's a bit of a figurehead, and I don't know, maybe that is a bit me. Mostly just host a meeting every 2 weeks and see what people want to fix. Other people have come along and written kernel patches for the antivirus that I wouldn't have a clue how to do. They've come along and rewritten a whole pile of other tools, packaged up new versions of Notes. I haven't had time to touch Notes in years. I did the versions in 2008, 8 or something, but since then someone else has repackaged notes for every update, so yeah, it works well on its own now.
Cool. So, new question then. If you're talking to people who are using Windows, what's the encouragement to move to, say, Linux? Why would you encourage it? What's the benefit to them?
For me, I find it fantastically better to work with. As a techie developer, I do a lot with the command line, and Windows command line is awful. If I have a Windows box and I'm trying to do something on it, it very soon resembles a Linux box because it's got all the Linux tools built on it and running on it. If you've never used them before, then yeah, you get a GUI, you've got all the desktop applications. In the case of all the stuff in IBM, you have most of your corporate apps, your notes at the same time, and all your other clients, and they all pretty much the same. But you're built on a different foundation. You've got an open source core that other people are able to fix. If you want to fiddle with it and customize it more, there's far more scope for doing that. We have quite a lot of people that run completely different windowing managers, so their desktop looks completely different.
Right.
A lot of it, I think, is just people wanting to try something different.
Awesome.
Yeah, I agree, yeah. So, useful little bonus there. I didn't realise that you were part of that.
I kind of forget that I do that. It really is about an hour meeting every 2 weeks that I host.
Nice.
And then the occasional 20-30 minutes now and then of tinkering at something and trying to fix up a package. And yeah, there's a huge community of people that volunteer and do a lot of the real work these days.
Nice. Good. Well, the reason that I was inspired to talk to you and I thought it might be worth sharing is some of the stuff that you do outside of what you construe as your day job. And I understand briefly from talking to you in the past that you are part of and quite a figurehead for a community in Southampton. Is that right?
Yeah. So,
how would you describe that? Because I don't want to get it wrong from the offset. I'd rather you would...
So there's two words that pretty much summarise the place. And one's a makerspace and the other's a hackspace. Hackspace has connotations because of the word hack. But if you look it up on Wikipedia, it gives a description for a hackspace or a makerspace. It is basically a community group that comes together to build, tinker, recreate, repurpose, reuse, design, almost anything.
So generally messing around with stuff, in a good way.
Yeah, and some of that messing around is just, oh, this would be cool to do. Another part, times it's, my iPad's got a cracked screen. I bought the screen from eBay, but, I'd like some technical help repairing it. Stuff like that. We started out a couple of years ago, just meeting in a cafe in the evenings. And we got people coming along, and a lot of electronics enthusiasts and bringing stuff to play with. We poached some people from the cafe who were doing knitting and thought our group sounded a bit more interesting. And
well, they were doing knitting?
Yeah, there was
electrical wire.
They were actually doing knitting.
Cool.
It was in the Art House Cafe. I can't remember what the group was called. It's called Stitch and Bitch or something. I've always loved the name of them.
I want to join that group. That sounds brilliant.
Yeah, I always thought of it. When are you going to start the bitching?
Oh, you went the right way there.
So we met for quite a while, once a week in the evenings, and just sort of meeting up. Did the occasional sort of educational events and got an office to borrow down in Southampton and do something a bit more formal, where we sort of tried to do a bit of a talk on programming or something like that. But the group always struggled a bit with getting much in the way of the numbers. It would be some nights 3, some nights 8, maybe past 10 on a busy night.
Right.
And then we sort of came across a group of cycle repair guys. Trying to name them off the top of my head. Ride. And they turn out in Southampton, I think it was Thursday mornings, and they've got a deal with the council where they'll fix your bike for free. You just turn up and they'll do a safety check and a bit of a repair.
Wow.
But they... they got...
Shout out to them.
They were...
Well, when do they meet?
As I say, I think Thursday mornings in Southampton, they're out somewhere down by one of the buildings. But if you have a quick look online, you'll find when they're still around. They had a warehouse that they had quite a lot of spare space in, and they got quite a good deal on the rent for it. And someone had passed on our details, and he said, "That sounds awesome. I hear you guys could do some space. Do you want a little corner of my warehouse?"
What?
So for the best part of a year, we had 500 square feet of a corner of warehouse. The guy was really trusting because he gave us keys to the same warehouse he was in, and he had a really good selection of tools and bikes he was fixing and spare parts, all new. And we'd have sort of once a week opening hours, maybe up to twice a week, where people could come in and see our space. And having that space essentially free allowed us to go that little bit further from just meeting up in the evenings and talking about things to actually, you can donate us tools, and we've got benches, and you can leave some stuff here, and we're starting to get a bit of infrastructure.
Yeah.
Eventually that, you know, obviously had to come to an end. And we did a crowdfunding campaign in order to try and get enough money down to get deposit and a couple of months rent up on our own warehouse. And we're now down in the Liners Industrial Estate in Fremantle, which is trying to describe which end of Southampton it is. It's just off Shirley Road.
I'd describe that as the top end of Southampton.
I never know how to describe Southampton, but I was born in Australia, so it's all a bit far from me.
How did you find the crowdfunding went?
It went really well. We had quite a good community at that point. We'd done a couple of sort of opening events of our existing warehouse space, and there's a couple of YouTube videos and stuff like that of people turning up. We had a lot of people turn up to that, and they brought friends. And the sort of word went round to other people to give us some money, and I got word out round here, and half the people around my way said, okay, I'll give you a fiver. It sounds like an interesting prospect. Some of our core members donated significantly more. But at the end of it, we got quite enough money to basically keep us open for a fair while. Then we found a warehouse we could actually afford within that budget on top of all the bills, and we've now got this small, I think it's about 800 square feet. We've got two floors. Downstairs is a workshop.
Wow.
We've got pillar drill, a couple of saws, a couple of lathes. We've just got a new bandsaw, so that'll be quite a good power tool.
That's fantastic.
And how do you do your rolling funding? Where does that come from? Is donations people that turn up?
Yeah, we talked about funding quite a lot, especially in the early days, as to whether we want to set minimum fees and fixed fees and different tiered memberships. And I think it was a London Hackspace maybe came up with this idea of a voluntary-based thing. So we say, look, we reckon we need, with the current number of members, about £25 a month to stay open. Right. And that's to cover all the current costs, keep us afloat, and have some money for accidents, whatever. And we basically say, you pay what it's worth to you. If you can afford £25 and it's worth it, pay it. If you turn up once in a blue moon, pay a fiver or something. Pay whatever you think it's worth. And then we try and turn it around and say, if you're only paying a fiver and you turn up every night, you're cheating £20. Yeah. We're gonna close if you don't pay what it's worth. And the answer is simple, that we're currently sat there losing a small amount each month. We're at that tipping point between number of members and average donations.
Yeah.
If you bring a couple of mates who also bring the money, then you don't need to give more. But if people stop coming, then we need everyone to give a bit more. We've got enough of a fund that we're sitting on that we won't close at the current rate for a year or two, so we're looking good. But we'd really like to be able to grow.
Mm.
So we're still on that drive to not push up what people are paying, but increase the number of members.
Yeah, self-sustaining sort of kind of model.
Would you consider one of these new models, like the patronage model, where people agree that they will pay the equivalent of, 5p a day or something like that, so it aggregates up to £1.50 a month or something like that, on a rolling basis?
Yeah, most of our members are contributing significantly more. Mm.
But if you had enough people doing patronage, then it would aggregate together to produce.
And we've been trying to put in notions of various levels of membership, such as a friend of the makerspace, that someone can be a friend and therefore give money. And we're trying to make it quite easy. We've got direct debit and standing order details set out once you register on our website, and that allows people to pay what they want. And if you're not turning up often, then a small rolling payment is great. Mm. We offer a basis that if you only turn up once in a real blue moon, you can just pop along and leave some money in the box. Mm.
That's a really nice idea, because I know when I've been to various events and clubs, the one thing that put me off is the fact that you pay a large amount every month, and you might only go once or twice. It's just not...
Fitness gym membership. So, I've got to get down to it. What are some of the coolest things that have come out of the sort of maker space, man?
Well, depend which members you look at. A lot of stuff is member driven, but we recently won a fairly good 3D printer from Lulzbot. They gave us a $2,000 odd TAS 3D printer.
Wow.
So that's quite awesome. That's available for members to use, and that's fantastic.
You made me a batarang.
I did make you a batarang. We did a demo the other
week. Oh, John's face. You can't see it on the mic, but...
Where's my batarang?
Oh, no, it's just for Batman.
Tuesday and Thursday evenings, we're open. Drop down.
Oh, the full body armour is all right.
The full body armour will be the car. The car is your next project. People have talked about building a car at the space, and we're currently building a Dalek. A group project on building a Dalek. So there's 80 kilos of wood forming into the shape of a Dalek at the moment, based on an old electric wheelchair. It's currently remote controlled. The voice modulator is being installed, and the woodwork's halfway done. It just needs a bit of filling, smoothing, polishing, and spray painting, and we will have
it forever.
Yeah. We will have a remote controlled Dalek.
Oh,
I have to ask the nerd question: is it a first generation Dalek, current version?
I'm not building it. I'm not involved with it. But it's a recent generation Dalek.
Okay, cool.
I don't know the full details. You'll have to pop down and check, but it's from the one of the recent series.
One of the recent ones. Okay, so it can levitate and go.
Yeah,
on the
exactly. Yeah.
I'd imagine
we are in trouble. Yeah.
Doesn't need ramp access.
Well, yeah, it might need some camera tricks.
Okay.
Awesome. So you've got Daleks, Batarangs. What other stuff have you?
Yeah, we've been building 3D printers. We've had a 3D printer for a little while. One of the guys built a personal one, and that was an older model RepRap printer. We've recently built a very cool, what's called a Delta printer, which has a rather different axis construction.
Right.
And it's a really tall sort of triple-framed thing. It looks fantastic. You've got to come see it printing. It moves around really quick, so that's quite awesome. There's a lot of electronic stuff there. We've got a couple of oscilloscopes, so many soldering irons you wouldn't believe.
Oh, sweet.
So we've got a couple of guys there. One of the guys who's down regularly is a professional microchip manufacturer.
Oh, wow.
So he designs embedded microchip devices.
Cool.
So he looked at what we wanted for the Dalek for a voice modulator, and literally within 30 seconds he'd drawn a circuit diagram on the whiteboard, and then 2 minutes later he'd built the PCB printout and said, look, just send this off to this company to get printed and have the whole thing ready.
Brilliant.
So we've got some interesting resources around in terms of skills.
I suddenly have visions of the next all hands being given with a voice modulator.
That'll be good. In the style of a Dalek? Maybe morale choices there. Good or bad. Good social experiment.
Voice in the style of a Dalek, or a Dalek just rolling out in front of the audience?
Either or would be good. Conferencing a Dalek in to this.
Yes.
That'd be good.
So do you have a big age range coming to this?
We have a bit of variance. We have generally a lot of people around the age of 18-year-olds and students up to mid-30s and so. We have a couple of pensioners that come along occasionally.
Yeah.
We have one guy who's been trying to start up a Friday morning session occasionally.
Oh.
He's a retired chap, and I think we said that we needed two people for safety, so you couldn't be operating power tools on your own.
Yeah.
And I think they're fairly regularly open on a Friday morning. We're in talks with local men's sheds group. Men's sheds are something that started coming up for generally retired gentlemen who want to do something in their free time, and that's hands-on workshop type stuff.
Mm.
And Portsmouth has quite a big men's shed, but I don't think there is one yet in Southampton. And it turns out that when you look at what a men's shed tries to do with general tools, what they want is a lot of saws and lathes and sanders and drills and stuff.
Yeah,
and
sense.
That's all the tools, sort of half what we're looking at as well.
Yeah.
We've got three lathes, a couple of different types of saws, a sander, a pillar drill, a whole pile of hand drills. So there's an excellent crossover. So we're trying to see if that sort of group in Southampton would want to use our space, because it's open all weekdays, or it's available all weekdays, and no one's in it. We do regular open evenings three times a week, Tuesday and Thursday evenings and Saturday afternoons. And that's generally anyone from the public can come along and have a tour around, pop in and use the tools for a donation. All our members have access to the space once they've gone through certain levels of background checks and known within the community. We're currently rewriting our RFID-based door access system, because at the moment it's sat on a hard-coded list, but very shortly it'll be available to any member that has gone through the checks, is currently paying donations. You can come in any time, 24/7.
Really?
You can open the door.
Really good.
I don't know what the landlord's going to say when he realises we've completely taken apart the main lock to stop it locking the door and put an RFID release.
He'll be chuffed to bits with that.
He's going
to
think it's brilliant.
We'll
give him the source code when we leave.
Yeah, exactly.
And he'll think that's fantastic.
Yeah, perfect.
So is it a good place to come and just learn about technology, about building things and electronics?
Yeah, there's a fantastic amount of resource. It's a bad place to come and get anything done, because you turn up and you go, oh, I'm going to work on this little bit of code, and then you see the guy building an RGB LED cube next, and you go, that's awesome!
I need
how
one
did
of
you
those
build that? And then you spend
life
the next 2 hours going through the design and learning more than you ever knew about electronics.
Wow.
Yeah, we've got quite a few people. Some guys are trying to put together some little robotics kits to use as a really low-cost introduction to robotics. There's another guy trying to start up a couple of business ideas and get them off the ground with his friend, and they're often along prototyping some of these business things that you want to get manufactured into shops. there's just generally a lot of us hanging around 3D printing stuff and playing with electronics.
Because one of the big barriers to entry for getting involved in this technology is things like getting hold of soldering kits, and then the actual things like lathes and the ability to craft wood and
how to actually use them and get the best from them as
expertise to call on. And that sounds like you've got all that just there.
Yeah, I mean, it'll vary on the nights. If you turn up one night, you might find that no one around has a clue how to use a lathe. But if you get the right night, you'll get a guy there who's spent half his life working with lathes, and he can tell you, exactly how they work.
Oh, brilliant. Sweet.
Brilliant. Brilliant. You ever get tempted to enter competitions like the dearly loved Robot Wars?
I don't think anyone's talked about Robot Wars. Quite a lot of our group take part in things like Hacksotton and other... there's another one recently, a sort of charity-based hack. And whatever we find that's interesting, someone always goes, oh, anyone want to take part? Or the Brighton Mini Maker Fair is coming up and stuff like that. And people are going, oh, anyone want to enter who can help organise? So it's always interesting to go out and take part in those competitions or events.
Mm.
And it's a great community. If you want to get involved with some of those and go out to some of those events, you can go with the people that are going. Quite a lot of our user base has done trips to half the other hacker spaces in the area. Reading and London and Brighton, and I'm trying to think what other hacker spaces are nearby.
No, that's amazing. So just, I mean, it's... what you mentioned a website. Do you want to give a shout-out to what that website
is? It's somakeit.org.uk.
One word, somakeit.org.uk.
Yep.
Brilliant. Fantastic.
Guys at Shoreditch, James Governor at Shoreditch had a fantastic event of after, which was people brought their kids along to play with technology.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Which is was very well received and really popular. Is that something that would be appropriate for your hackspace, to bring all the kids and do an introduction?
Yeah, we did something for Arduino Day where we had invited families down, and we had conductive squishy circuits made from Play-Doh.
Oh,
so we made a conductive Play-Doh and sold sort of £2 bags of Play-Doh with a battery and some lights, and you could build a circuit and join up an LED and make it glow through Play-Doh wires. And did a few other things. We had a workshop involving doing things with Arduinos and making them blink a few lights for kids to play with. But again, it kind of centred around the squishy circuits.
Yes.
And that was for Arduino Day. We've done it for a few other things as well. I can't think of what events, but we've taken them along to various events and tried to promote it there.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, when we get the chance and someone's willing to organise an event, we definitely get involved in things like that. It largely comes down to, yes, you've heard about this event. Who wants to organise it? Because everyone's got limited time, and if you want to organise it, you'll get a load of people turning up with you and probably helping you. But if no one steps forward to take leadership of it, then that event probably won't really get happening.
So how many days a week are you guys open for? Is it like are you open for like 2 days a week to come along and try this out?
So it's on our website as well, but Tuesday and Thursday evenings we're open.
Okay.
Saturday afternoons we're open, and some Friday mornings. The Friday mornings you might have to check for on the mailing list because they're not as regular, but the Tuesday, Thursday and Saturday, they're pretty much without fail.
Absolutely fantastic. And so I think in the interest of time we'll probably have to cut it there, but you'll be available for more information should people want to talk to you, I'm sure.
Yeah, we've got an IRC channel that we're on. We're on SoMakeIt on Freenode, and you can jump on there, or we've got a mailing list. I mean, check out our website, it's got all the contact details and it's got our address and stuff.
Utterly fantastic. Sweet. Thank you so much for coming in. Really appreciate
it. Real joy, really. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was awesome.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yes.
Amazing. And the thing about that, there's a guy who's not only making things, but is able to make the colossi that we dream of producing.
Absolutely.
I'm popping along there tomorrow.
Yeah. No, that's brilliant. I mean, I love that he's clearly a community-spirited chap, and but to turn out something like that, that anybody can get involved in, literally anybody can go learn, anybody can go and get new experiences.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
So just a shout-out for Anton, it's SoMakeIt, SoMakeIt.org.uk.
We'll make that in the community as well, so you can just click it on the community and have a go.
We'll stick that link in there. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you, Anton.
There's a place to go to just try out this stuff and go, well, I make things, we'll see how it works.
Yes.
And there's a place you can go to without making that huge investment.
Absolutely.
In tools and space and time.
Yes. Mate, it reminds me of my dad's garage. Brilliant.
Yeah. You can just go and try it out.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Maybe you should do a control outing.
We should.
An outside broadcast.
Yes,
an OB. Oh, amazing.
What a really good idea.
Why not?
That's a wonderful idea, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we could do it from there.
Yeah, and we could set up a mini stall.
Yeah.
And whoever is there, we could grab a 30-second interview with them.
Oh,
that's
lightning,
a really
a lightning
nice
interview.
Idea.
Mm. I like it.
Mm.
Let's do it.
Excellent.
Why not?
So anything else for today's show then, chaps?
Well, I had a question that I'd like to ask you guys. I need a bit of advice. See, the thing is, I have actually finally lashed out and got myself a Blu-ray player.
Uh-huh.
I've never had a Blu-ray player
Blimey.
Before. Yeah.
I recently got one as well.
Okay.
Did you?
So, I remember when DVDs were first starting to come out. The DVD to get was The Matrix. That was the one that would really show the quality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have never actually seen a Blu-ray DVD, Blu-ray movie. I've got the HDTV, I've now got the Blu-ray player. What would you recommend would be a great Blu-ray to watch for my first initiation into the world of Blu-ray?
Well, so I have some marginal experience with this because I recently upgraded my home kit just before Christmas.
Right.
So I got a new TV and I also bought a Blu-ray home cinema system that connects over an ARC connector. It's a Panasonic thing.
Mm.
So that you can have one HDMI cable that both passes information to and from the TV. But everything that's connected to the TV will send its information down to home cinema. So my Xbox is now plugged into the TV and then it sends its sound through.
Oh, nice.
System. Very clever stuff. The first film that we tested it on, now this might be a bit unusual, we tested 300.
Ah.
Yeah, because we didn't have a huge choice,
right.
But that was the one where we thought, right, slow motion, choppy, would actually demonstrate it, and it was great.
Yeah.
It was great first film.
But 300 has a bit of a cartoony...
Exactly, it's a graphic novel film, precisely, so we followed it up with...
Okay, right.
The Dark Knight.
I was going to say.
Now that's good because there's a lot of black in it.
Yes.
So
yes.
what you gain, in the Blu-ray and the super high def stuff is those subtleties around the black, the colours of black. So shades, grey, you know, suddenly things come to life a little bit. You really get that sense of, wow, the cinematographer was going for that and that really works. But what I did, the complete highlight, we had a weekend. Lord of the Rings marathon.
Oh, really?
Wow.
We did a Saturday morning, started at 8:30 with Bacon Butties and the Fellowship of the Ring.
Oh.
We did the extended versions right the way through to midnight.
Oh, what a good idea.
It was fantastic, and we introduced beers and pizzas, and my mate Dave's wife, Jan, made this stuff that was just more calories per square inch than anything else I've ever eaten in my life.
She sounds amazing. Great.
She is. Awesome. She's also one of the most creative people I know. She might be a potential interviewee.
Oh, that'd be brilliant.
She makes cakes, she creates birthday cards, done tons of stuff. Right, that's it, I'll book her in.
Yeah.
But it was The Lord of the Rings was unbelievable. It looked gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. So that would be my recommendation. Would be Lord of the Rings.
All right, okay. I'm going to go for similar. Actually, Dark Knight Rises.
Oh
yeah, because I'm hopeful that if you listen to it on Blu-ray, you can figure out what Bane's actually saying. What? But also as well, that's phenomenal.
That would be most uncomfortable.
Yes. That is a great line.
That would be most uncomfortable.
For you. Have you ever seen it?
No.
So,
do you reckon the Batman trilogy, Christopher Nolan's Batman trilogy?
I think so. I think yes, I do. I think so.
I agree. I think the first, because the first one's beautiful, it's very brown.
Yes.
And then the second one's very blue.
Yeah.
And the third one's very grey, bleaky, I think.
Okay.
Sort of.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one I was going to suggest, for very similar reasons to you, Gravity.
Oh.
Because of all the black and the different and the scales.
I've not seen that yet.
Yes. That is the cinema. That is amazing. Yeah. I don't know how it translates to a small screen.
Now, I actually saw Gravity on the IMAX screen in 3D, and I have seen it on ordinary 2D DVD.
Yeah,
and obviously it didn't have the same impact. So actually, the Gravity is a really good,
frame of reference.
Yeah. Exactly for the comparison.
I mentioned the sound as well.
Sound's key. I mean, the other thing that you get with the Blu-ray is the quality of sound.
Yeah,
the definition is fantastic. Mm. So. Yeah, I noticed. We when we first put the the system together, because it's quite an undertaking to remove your old system, put the new one in. We put it together. For some reason, I think the subwoofer settings were a little bit wrong, but we had it. I had to ramp the subwoofer right up. I think I was watching Netflix via the telly, and it sort of, for some reason, the sound quite hadn't quite sorted itself. So I had the subwoofer. We put 300 in, and then press play, and the whole room's vibrating. Yeah. There's pictures coming off the wall. Everything's neighbours are going spares. So I turn it on my ears. So the sound is spectacular. Oh,
excellent, great. Thank you both very much for those recommendations.
Absolutely.
Brilliant.
I think we can finish up there.
I think we're done.
They've suffered enough, haven't they?
Do you what?
They've suffered enough.
The listener has suffered more than enough today.
Excellent.
An extended edition.
Brilliant. That's a wrap. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you. Bye.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Johnny Mac, Mr. Jezalenko, and Dr. Adrian Warman, best riding technology, like a colossus, it's Hursley FM.